Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, working to assure opportunities for successful employment for all people with disabilities. A skilled workforce for Florida's businesses. The Able Trust. Empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A failed attempt at repealing Florida's Stand Your Ground law isn't getting opponents of the law down, as a bill aiming to change the law is still alive in the Senate, but the whole idea may face a hurdle in the House.
There is no meaningful reform currently moving through the Florida Senate. I think you've got a couple of senators who just want to see something pass, even though it doesn't fundamentally alter the rights of Floridians in a favorable way.
Also this week, some say Florida's system for getting unemployed people back to work could be more trouble than some applicants think it's worth.
How many tests would the normal applicant have to take in order to successfully have us help them get a job?
We'll also take a look ahead to Florida's gubernatorial election next year and get into the blazing discussion about medical marijuana. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. After a legislative bid to repeal Florida's Stand Your Ground law failed this week, the focus now turns to whether opponents of the existing law will now throw their weight behind a proposal aimed at tweaking the law. We get more on that story from Sasha Cordner.
Thursday's five-hour hearing saw each side literally going back and forth between the pros and cons of Stand Your Ground. Law enforcement agencies opposed the repeal, including Okaloosa County Sheriff Larry Ashley.
Are you going to steal my TV, my radio, or other belongings? Are you going to rape, rob, and murder me? We don't have the time to figure out, do we have the right to defend ourselves? It's a presumption that we have a right to defend ourselves, not only in your home, but in your neighborhood, at the mall, anywhere you have a lawful right to be. And Florida sheriffs stand behind this law and oppose the repeal of it.
Others, like Ron Davis, were not sure whether they'd like a repeal or a rewrite of the law. But Davis says lawmakers have a responsibility to take the existing law off the books. His son, Jordan, was killed last year in Jacksonville by a man who's now using Stand Your Ground in his defense.
When you think that people are reasonable and you give them an out, you give them a way to say, if there are no witnesses, I can do this, and all they're going to ask for is what is in the mind of the shooter. Because the victim has no story. So they're going to make up the story that they want to make up. And so that's what you have to think of when you make these laws and you rewrite these laws, whether you have to repeal it or just rewrite it. You have to think of, we're looking at the mind of the shooter.
Still, the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee voted down Tallahassee Representative Alan Williams' repeal bill by an overwhelming 11-2 margin. That wasn't surprising to the two Democratic leaders in either chamber. Here's Fort Lauderdale Senator Chris Smith speaking before the hearing's end.
It seems predetermined. It seems that, you know, there are people on the committee who are predetermined to vote against the bill.
And here's House Minority Leader Perry Thurston forecasting the vote's outcome during a press conference in the days leading up to the hearing.
We don't know exactly what they're going to do. Probably going to do not one damn thing.
Thurston says instead of hearings that go nowhere, lawmakers should do what Floridians want, make changes to the existing law, as in a proposal authored by Smith and Altamont Springs Republican David Simmons.
It's a discussion about what are the state attorneys saying? What are law enforcement saying? What changes do they want to see come about? And I think that's the adult and professional way of handling this bill, not to just have individuals come out and sound the alarm about keeping it or getting rid of it.
But the proposal already moving through the Senate has a hurdle. Fort Walton Beach Republican Matt Gaetz, who chairs the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee and sets the agenda. A staunch proponent of Stand Your Ground, he's repeatedly said the bipartisan fix lacks substance. Still, following the hearing, Gaetz said he's not ruling anything out.
Well, this is the Florida legislature. I guess, you know, we haven't begun our legislative session, so hope springs eternal for everyone. Now, of course, the bill filing deadline has not concluded. So if there's a substantive way to keep the duty, you know, to Stand Your Ground in place, I think that, of course, we'll always review laws as they're written, presented, and in the possession of our committee.
Meanwhile, Smith says he remains hopeful Gates will hear his bill in the House.
Well, we talked briefly, and then we're looking to talk after this to continue the discussion. Today was their first, you know, bite at the apple, but yeah, I've been in contact with him to continue the discussion. Today is not the last day that the House should visit Stand Your Ground in its provisions.
As for the sponsor of the repealer bill, Alan Williams says he's not giving up on putting an end to the existing law, this time through a different avenue.
Obviously, we've heard from the committee that at least this year in this House, we won't have a repeal bill. I think if we can't repeal it, we must repair it. That's been my argument all along. I said, look, I think that was the first place to start. And I believe we owe it to the citizens of the state to make sure that we have, if not a perfect law, a better law.
Williams says he now intends to work with Smith, Simmons, and all parties involved toward passing their proposal amending Stand Your Ground. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Is Florida doing all it can to help unemployed people get back to work? Not everyone thinks so. At least one lawmaker says a skills assessment citizens are required to take before collecting benefits is doing more harm than good. As Regan McCarthy tells us, some say it's time to look for a new alternative that actually identifies people's skills.
Minnesota Republican Senator Nancy Dietert says she's worried people applying for reemployment assistance might find the state's test so frustrating they'd quit midway through, or maybe never take the test at all.
Are we spending millions to help people, or are we spending millions just to annoy unemployed people?
Dietert says when lawmakers passed the bill, the unemployment rate in Florida was as high as 12%, and it was important to identify various places where unemployed people might re-enter the workforce.
Based on this test that we gave you, we think you might qualify for another list of jobs that we know of.
But Dietert says the test the state is administering doesn't do that. Instead, she says it just serves to check whether someone knows how to read and do basic math. And she says it probably also makes them feel bad.
Either a third grader could pass it, or an adult with reasonable intelligence would get so frustrated with this thing that they would just say, they're putting up hurdles to keep me from collecting unemployment.
Florida Public Radio asked the Department of Economic Opportunity for a look at the assessment, but department officials say that's against policy because officials, quote, would not want a job seeker to receive an inaccurate assessment. But they did send a demo test, which department spokeswoman Jessica Sims says asks the same kinds of questions. All right, so I'll start with applied mathematics. Ooh, my least favorite subject. So I thought I'd try it out. Tony's paid $7.25 per hour and time and a half for any time over 40 hours. What is his total earnings if he worked 42 and a half hours? All right, here's a little calculator down here that I can open. The test is split into three parts, a math section, a reading comprehension section, and a section that asks the test taker to find information on a chart. Department officials are careful to point out there's no pass or fail associated with the assessment. Once it's completed, it took me about an hour, the participant is given a chance to review skills from the test. Dietert wonders if the tests available at the state's one-stop shops like Tallahassee's Workforce Plus might be a better option.
Would you like to guard money in an armored car? Eh. Study space travel? Eh. Make a map of the bottom of an ocean. Maybe, I'm sure. Conduct a symphony orchestra. Okay.
That's Workforce Assessment Officer Darlene Phillips. She's working through what's called an e-choices exam. After testers finish, it pops up a list of potential jobs that might fit their interests and even highlights which ones are available in the area. Phillips says the system also lets people list jobs they've held previously and then recommends other types of jobs that require similar skills. Phillips says from what she sees, it's a helpful system.
A lot of times people don't know that the assessments are here, that they're available, but then we're getting the word out, and so people are trying it and going, wow, I didn't know that this was here. So yeah, I think it's working well.
Dietert raised her concerns during a Senate Commerce and Tourism Committee meeting where she grilled Department of Economic Opportunity officials on the current practice.
That's the beauty of early meetings. We're fresh from living in our own hometowns and and hearing the problems, and we're trying to address the problems that we hear in our communities. So,
Florida Public Radio asked Dietert's office for information about who brought these complaints to the senator and filed a public records request in an attempt to obtain that information from the senator's emails. But in an email, Dietert told the Senate Secretary's office she has not received any emails or letters on the subject and is questioning the skills assessment based on her own opinion. Department of Economic Opportunity officials say they're stuck in the current contract until June of 2014. Dietert says officials inherited the program from the Department of Education, adding she doesn't blame the DEO, but does wonder if the state could switch more quickly if Florida already owns the rights to something like what Workforce Plus is using. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. Still to come on Capitol Report, a former Republican Florida governor says he'd like to try that job again as a Democrat. We'll have two reports on the political rebirth of Charlie Crist. Also, third-party candidates and those with no name recognition face a tough road to the 2014 gubernatorial nomination, but are taking a truly grassroots approach to the race.
You know, as I said, I'm focusing on the people. I'm not focusing on the party structure, per se.
And the debate over legalizing medical marijuana is heading for the Florida Supreme Court.
The constitutional amendment itself would legalize marijuana and would allow not just medical doctors, but lots of other people to write prescriptions to just about anybody.
Former Republican Florida governor turned Democrat Charlie Crist has made his campaign official. We have two reports on that, starting with this piece from Steve Newborn with WUSF in Tampa.
You might be forgiven for having a feeling of deja vu during the announcement. It was held in the St. Petersburg waterfront, about a mile from where Charlie Crist announced his run for Senate about 3 years ago. Then he had just ditched his Republican credentials and ran as an independent. This time, Crist has done a 180.
No matter what they say, it is not a sin to reach across the aisle. It is your obligation to work together. So, yes, I'm running as a Democrat, and I am proud to do it.
So now Crist, as a proud Democrat, is putting his populist shoes back on and is campaigning as an outsider. He spoke as a blustery wind peppered the crowd of a couple of hundred people.
Rick Scott, like his gang, and this gang in Washington, and here in Florida, seem to think that the only way to govern is from the fringes. That anyone who doesn't agree with them on everything is an enemy, or worse yet, somehow not as patriotic. When the people give you the honor of being their governor, you aren't the governor of any one party. You're the governor for all Floridians.
One of the things that matters to Crist is money. There won't be any shortage of that on the Republican side. Rick Scott spent more than $70 million of his own money to win the office 3 years ago. This time, he wants to raise $100 million. So Crist, who was outspent when he ran for Senate as an independent, is counting on the Democratic money machine. But Tampa Bay Times Tallahassee Bureau Chief Steve Bosquet says the former governor has an advantage money can't buy.
He won't have anywhere near the kind of money Rick Scott has, but here's the catch. He doesn't need that much money. Crist has about 96% name ID in this state, and it's an interesting thing. There are three and only three political figures in the state of Florida who have what I would call universal name recognition. One is Jeb Bush, one is Marco Rubio, and the third is Charlie Crist.
Republicans started their campaign to paint Crist as an opportunist weeks before today's announcement. They've launched www.charlieforflorida.com.
His only core belief is personal ambition. He's an opportunist, says Tampa's Mayor Buckhorn. Congressman Kendrick Meeks says he can't be trusted. Al Gore said it's a little unusual to have somebody flip-flop and then flop-flip. Who were they all talking about? This man, Charlie Crist.
But that party bending had little effect on some of his supporters, like Shavonda Bailey. She drove to the event from Manatee County to show her support.
I think that he's a smart man with a smart move. If you saw the wrong things being done with the party that you were with, and you know that Democrats are the better party to go with, I think that he made a very smart move. I don't find there's any issues with that, you know.
Do you think he's got a tough campaign ahead of him against Governor Scott?
I think that he's going to be our next governor. Rick has really let us down in many ways, and we would love to see Charlie take that office back.
On the other side of the spectrum is Carol Bowers of Madeira Beach. She voted for Crist when he was a Republican, but vows that won't happen again.
I think he is an opportunist. I think he just jumps wherever he thinks it'll benefit Charlie Crist and he can get the votes. And if he gets rejected from one group, he jumps into the next group, and he's just to advance himself. I don't think he had any core principles.
Crist immediately took the front runner spot in the Democratic Party from Nan Rich, who has made little traction in her quest for the governor's seat. And with incumbent Rick Scott's polling numbers not doing so well, this race is an open book. I'm Steve Newborn in St. Petersburg.
I'm Stan Jastrzebski with this week's Reporter Talkback. We're on the line now with WUSF Interim News Director Steve Newborn. And Steve, during the course of your piece there, you got some feedback from people who are potentially going to vote in this race. And some say it seems like they are going away from Charlie Crist, feeling that they are feeling the same way that the Republican Party has been saying, look, he's a quitter, he left, he's going away from Florida, he's not paying attention to you. And there are some people to whom it seems that doesn't matter.
Right. I guess it just depends which side of the aisle you're coming from. I actually talked to two people immediately after Crist's announcement. And the first one was a Democrat. She came to St. Petersburg from Manatee County. Nice long drive. And she said, quote, I think that he's a smart man with a smart move. If you saw wrong things being done with the party you were with and you knew that Democrats were the better party to go with, I think he made a very smart move. So you have people like that. And on the other side of the aisle, you had a woman by the name of Carol Bowers. She was holding a fan of Charlie Crist that says Charlie Crist is a fan of whoever he wants to be. And she basically called him an opportunist. That is the catchword that I was hearing just about from everybody who opposes Charlie.
That has seemingly been the watchword of the week, especially from RPOF officials.
Right. Yeah, that's the Republican talking points. And I have to give them credit. She came out with this phrase before the talking points even came out. And she just basically said, you know, Charlie will do whatever benefits Charlie, wherever he can get the votes. And if he gets rejected by one group, he'll just find another group that'll take him in. So that is a lot of the sentiment you're hearing from some of the voters, and you're going to be hearing that repeatedly from the Republicans over the course of the next year.
So I guess the question is, are there enough Democrats willing to take him in, so to speak, that he has a viable shot of unseating Rick Scott?
You know, Stan, I think that's the big question. There's no doubt that Charlie Crist is a much better campaigner than Rick Scott will ever be. He connects with people on an emotional level. He's much warmer than Scott will ever be. But the big question here is, will Democrats come out on Election Day? He is kind of a lukewarm Democrat. People think of him as a moderate Republican, if there's such a thing. So the big question is, are the Democrats going to embrace him enough to come out to the polls on Election Day?
How much do you think personality matters in this race? Is it going to be a race that's about the vastly different personalities of these two gentlemen, or is it going to be able to get back to policy decisions at some point?
No, I think it's going to be all about personality, at least with Charlie Crist. Right now, Rick Scott has the numbers going for him in the direction, the economy's direction that's been going. The state has been rebounding. He's making good on his promises to have all those jobs created that he promised when he first came into office. But Rick Scott doesn't come across as the guy you want to have a beer with or go to a barbecue with. Charlie Crist is the consummate back slapper, handshake, kiss a baby kind of politician who connects with voters on a visceral level, and he's gonna work that charm as much as he can. So I think we're gonna see the warm and cozy guy versus the automaton is, I think, what Charlie's gonna try to paint his opponent as.
WUSF Interim News Director Steve Newborn has been covering Charlie Crist's entrance into the 2014 gubernatorial race. Steve, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure, Stan.
For months, pundits have been game planning the Charlie Crist-Rick Scott matchup, in fact, even before it officially existed. But as Lynn Hatter reports, a slew of other candidates have been in the race since long before either of the big-name candidates, struggling all the while to make their campaigns relevant.
The names of candidates for governor listed on the Florida Department of State's website include 9 people with no party affiliation, 2 libertarians, and 1 representative of the Socialist Party of Florida, who actually represents another party. Most of these candidates are not well known, and as Florida State University political scientist Carol Weissert notes, they face an uphill battle just by not running on the Democratic or Republican tickets.
When push comes to shove, they don't want to waste their vote. Mm-hmm. They feel strongly about it, and so they want to vote either for a candidate or against a candidate sometimes.
Adrian Wiley is one of 2 libertarian candidates. He says he's in the race because he feels both current Governor Rick Scott and former Governor Charlie Crist are too alike. And by that, he means they're too far left on the political spectrum.
They both, at the time, called themselves fiscal conservatives, yet I believe the budget increased approximately $6 billion under Charlie Crist, and it has increased $8 billion under Rick Scott. So you've got 2 guys, neither of whom have any intention of cutting the budget.
During Crist's time in office, the state budget went from a record $73 billion down to nearly $66 billion. That's largely due to the Great Recession. During Scott's tenure, the state budget has gone up to about $70 billion, largely due to the economic recovery. Wiley says he'd cut Florida's budget and keep it cut. He'd also repeal Common Core learning standards and continue fighting Obamacare. Wiley's goal is to get to the gubernatorial debates in 2014, and to do so, he has to register support from 15% of those surveyed on a Mason-Dixon poll. Earlier in the summer, on another poll, he scored around 9%. Wiley wants to win the governor's race in 2014, but another candidate, Atlee Yarrow, has a different goal.
Third-party candidates, we don't really get much of anything from anybody. But we do serve one purpose, and that's to apply pressure to the 2 major parties.
Yarrow is listed on the Florida Department of State's website as representing the Socialist Party of Florida, but he's actually running as the candidate of the American Freedom Party of Florida. On its website, the party lists itself as a, quote, political party for white Americans to defend civil rights and liberties, end quote. The segregationist candidate supports boosting and rebuilding aging infrastructure systems like roads and rail, and believes the state should do more to enforce immigration laws. He says third-party candidates like him run on principle.
You know, everybody likes to talk a good game about diversity in their issues, but it just doesn't exist. People are people. It's kind of that paradox, you know, where people don't know really what to do. They suffer from a certain paralysis of, I'm going to vote for the devil that I know versus somebody that I don't know.
There is a third name some voters might know on the primary ballot, Nan Rich. And yet, even when she was the only former Democratic office holder in the race, almost no one, both within her own party and from the Republican Party of Florida, considered her a serious challenger. So Rich, a one-time state senator, says she's relying on the voters for support instead.
I think it's a combination of having enough money to get your message out to the voters, but also, I truly believe that this strong grassroots organization is incredibly important. And I think you only need to look to Obama to see that.
Rich, who served 12 years in the Florida legislature, has been campaigning for the better part of a year, making more than 200 stops across the state. But now she's forced to make the same argument against Charlie Crist to keep her own campaign alive, as Rick Scott will try to make to win himself a second term in office.
I believe when it all comes together and people compare the credentials of former Governor Crist and myself, they will choose the true Democrat, and that would be me.
Rich says she's reaching out to local Democratic parties to gain more influence. But FSU political scientist Carol Weissert says only one thing matters in primary elections, name recognition.
The problem is that, you know, we select our candidates by primaries, and that's the voters, not necessarily the local Democratic parties.
And when voters recognize a current governor and a former one are running against one another, it's pretty obvious who the nominees are likely to be. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. When Floridians choose their next governor next year, they might also decide whether to legalize medical marijuana. But as Jessica Palumbo reports, the state attorney general and legislative leaders don't want the question to make it onto ballots as it's currently written.
Medical marijuana legalization advocates and opponents are readying arguments they'll make before the state Supreme Court next month. The High Court will rule on whether a proposed constitutional amendment is misleading. Court filings by Attorney General Pam Bondi and legislative leaders Don Gates and Will Weatherford say the text hides the amendment's true potential for enabling widespread marijuana use, and anti-drug abuse groups agree.
You know, anybody would be able to get this of any age. There's not an age restriction on it for any condition that their physician wanted to give it to them for.
Amy Ronshausen is executive director of the Florida Coalition Alliance of Drug-Free Community Groups. She says her group doesn't believe smoked marijuana is real medicine anyway.
When you get your prescription, you go to a pharmacy and you have it filled. And on the bottle, it says when to take it, interactions with other medications, it has warnings.
Ronshausen says with marijuana, a patient doesn't know the strength of what they're getting. But close to a quarter million Floridians have signed petitions in support of its legalization. Ben Polera is leading the petition drive, which aims to gather about 600,000 more signatures by the end of the year.
It's really for people who are suffering in the state, who have, you know, who have gone through a number of different treatments to try to alleviate their symptoms and ease their pain and have come up short.
But opponents, including the Florida Sheriff's Association, point to the state's recent pill mill epidemic and ask if Floridians want pot shops to be the new pill mills. But Polera argues the proposed amendment wouldn't allow people easy access.
There's a lot of hoops that need to be jumped through in order to get a medical marijuana treatment card here. So it's not going to be like if you're here for a week, you can even get one.
The amendment would require a licensed physician to examine a patient before issuing a medical marijuana certificate. That would be sent to the state in exchange for a patient ID card. Polera adds no changes would go into effect until after the following legislative session, giving lawmakers and healthcare regulators the opportunity to make and clarify rules.
You know, this can be legislated properly. My legislation actually requires the user of the medical marijuana to use it in the privacy of their own home.
Lake Worth Democratic Senator Jeff Clemens has been sponsoring medical marijuana bills for the past 3 years, but they haven't been given a hearing. He says he's disappointed leadership didn't consult him before filing their opposition to the amendment.
I think that in many ways the reactions were political as opposed to policy-driven.
Ultimately, of course, politics had to come into the calculus there.
University of Miami political scientist George Gonzalez says Bondi's opposition to the initiative could be a strategy to bring out her base of voters in a year when she's up for re-election. Likewise, he says the controversial issue of medical marijuana could affect voter turnout in next year's governor's race.
I mean, of course, a lot depends on the campaigns themselves and how they seek to structure it, right? So if, both candidates try to make this as a litmus test for voters, I mean, that could have an impact.
That is, if the amendment passes Supreme Court review. Oral arguments are scheduled for early December. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Banks, Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, committed to helping high school students with disabilities graduate and advance to jobs, post-secondary education, and a bright future. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment, on the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.